So back to, you know, the concerns I have is knowing that area. This is, you know, I live on Old Stage right down the road. And knowing this Hammond Ranch area, those roads are steep. They're impassable by residents, let alone, you know, people from out of the area, especially this winter we've been given. And I would say that, you know, an issue that I think that this landowner has not been able to address is the plowing and providing ample parking, which is a condition of a vacation rental. And if you can't provide adequate parking, and you're, because the roads are too steep, and you know, you've got a foot of snow and it's not being plowed, that would be a condition that's not being met for the permit. And I would have concerns about that in a winter time.
Through the chair.
Okay.
Yeah.
There seems to be some confusion with the people who are calling into this meeting regarding the public hearing portion. I've had two people chat to request that they speak, and one additional person has their hand raised. One of the people who has requested to speak is the property owner. So I just want to clarify whether or not you would like to reopen the public
hearing. I would. Yeah, I'll go ahead and reopen the public hearing. So with that, I will start with project proponents. So please raise your hand if you are a project proponent and you have not spoken.
To be clear, the project proponent, Joan Sinibaldi, indicated through chat that she wishes to speak, and I have unmuted her at this time.
Okay, go ahead, please.
She's the owner.
Yeah, please.
Morning. I hope everyone can hear me. My name is Joan Sinibaldi. My husband and I, along with our respective families, have cherished the experience of being at 1900 Maple Drive.
Ms. Sinibaldi, can you please hold on just a second?
Sure.
I didn't hear her start off with her address.
Can you state your address for the record?
Oh, yes. Joan Sinibaldi, 1900 Maple Drive, Weed.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. So as I said, my husband and I, along with our respective families, have cherished experience of being in the 1900 Maple since we first acquired it in August of 2021. We've also have happily shared this beautiful environment with other guests who have come to stay with us to rejuvenate, all the while striving to remain respectful towards our neighbors and our community. We have provided everyone that we've met so far with our phone numbers and made them aware that we do have staff that are local, and we're also often up there to take care of things. And we've always kept the communication open with them. We're very grateful for this day, as this is a chance for us to listen directly to those around us and how they feel about our presence there. Having already received feedback from some nearby individuals, we're doing whatever possible within the reason to address any issues or concern that they might have. Now, I just want to address a few concerns that were mentioned earlier, which is a huge concern. And we're slowly learning as you know, we've been up there for a little over a year now, the snow issue. And we understand the streets and also the parking situation. We've been aware of that because our neighbors have been good about contacting us, and each time they do, we try to remedy the situation. And just recently, we have purchased a tractor ourselves so that our house manager, whenever it's needed, can plow our street. And hopefully the issue with parking is not going to be an issue anymore. There was also a mention about a generator. We've also recently purchased a generator, so that's not an issue anymore. Regarding the damage to the road, we had a complaint once about it, and we took care of it as soon as we can. And we're open to brainstorming and finding solutions to keep the road in good condition. About the trash issue, we have not been made aware of that since we started Airbnb-ing a property up there. If that happens, please let us know and we'll address it right away. Regarding the taxes, we'd be happy to supply documents on our end to show that taxes have been taken out of our booking. So it's automatic, and we can supply that information also, the proof of fees and fines that we have paid. Unfortunately, there is a lot of things that needed to be done to comply, and we're more than happy to comply with the regulations, but it took us a little bit of time to find help and to find solutions. As you guys all know, it's difficult to find help up there, but I believe at this point we have completed all of that requirements, and we're ready to move forward if allowed. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. I have one person calling in on a phone, and I have one person who is calling in via Zoom that would like to speak. Which one would you like?
All right, I'm going
to have the person ending in 1810, if you can unmute, please, and state your name and address for the record. You need to unmute. You can do that by pressing star 6. All right, they are not unmuting at this time.
Okay.
I'm going to lower their hand, and I'm going to go ahead, and it was Karen Rogers who would also like to speak on this project.
Okay.
Go ahead and state your name and address for the record, please. If you're muted on your end, you will need to unmute your device as well as the Zoom.
Battery 100%.
Karen, you have muted yourself. If you would like to speak, you will need to unmute. She texted and said that it's not allowing her to unmute. Karen, you were unmuted at one point. Perhaps your device. Okay, I can hear you now. Please go ahead and state your name and address for the record.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, one moment. I was trying to unmute on the 1810 line, but that wasn't working. So one moment.
Okay, you will have 5 minutes for your comment.
Give me just a second, please. Okay, so I have lived here about 38 years, and unfortunately there's some echo coming back from my, I'm on two devices, so I'm going to try to end that just a moment.
If I might make the
so
suggestion.
So we're snowed in here right now. The road's pretty much impassable. I'm sorry, but I have feedback. I don't know what I'm speaking on. Am I speaking on the computer with my name or the 1810?
You are speaking on the computer at this point. If you are also calling in on the phone, you will need to likely mute your phone or hang up the phone.
Yeah, I'm going to try that again because I had done that. That's star 6. I just did it.
Okay, right now you're speaking on your Zoom app. So that is the one that I would like for you to use if you are also calling
in on your
phone. All
right, one moment while I turn that volume up because I was trying to deal with two devices. How's this?
We can hear you just fine, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Sorry for that delay. I'm snowed in right now. There's a car stuck, couldn't get out. Serviceman's here that I'm trying to talk with too, who can barely, you know, pass on Maple. So I've been here about 38 years, and this subdivision wasn't really designed properly with the roads. I think it's sort of infamous for having a lot of problems that people are aware of. And road drainage and road passage and road maintenance is all falls upon people who live here. So In the years I've been here, whenever there's been someone stuck in the road, it's always been someone from out of the area. So just 2 days ago, I was on my way home during the big storm, know the roads, know my car, know what's needed. But there was a car stuck in the road, and it was from out of town. And I said, do you live here? No. We're looking for a motel. Now, I have talked with Joan Sinibaldi, and she seems very nice, and like, I don't think it was her person. But my point being, people who don't know these roads and the conditions, like moment to moment, hour to hour, can get you stuck. We were just literally going down a tunnel. And so because I was delayed by some out-of-towner who didn't know the conditions at all, I couldn't get my car. The snow then fell more, and I was unable to move my car further. Had to walk home with a child in the dark. So I think that the snow conditions and having our access potentially blocked is a serious concern for me. And I'm not sure how that can be resolved. I feel that the vacation ordinance needs to have special needs for Hammond Ranch addressed in order to protect the safety and well-being of the residents here. Perhaps the vacation ordinance needs to be looked at in terms of when there are privately maintained dirt roads and extreme snow conditions. We have to pay for the plowing, the county doesn't come do it, and sometimes it doesn't get plowed for a while. So a stuck car could really hold us up pretty significantly. My other concern is fire danger. We all know how that has dramatically increased in the last 10 years. And the residents who live here, I think, take extreme caution with guests and not having, even when we're allowed summer campfires or barbecues, not doing it, not having smokers and whatnot. So I'm personally concerned about people from out of the area who may not be as attuned to, you know, the criticalness of that for me. So is there no smoking allowed? Are there barbecues or campfires still allowed, which is something I'm sure that people like to enjoy in their Airbnb. So I can understand and appreciate the desire to use one's property as they wish and according to the law. But I do believe we are in an extremely remote wilderness, high danger, high safety area that deserves to have a second look at. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Was there the 1810 number, or was that her as well?
I believe that was her as well.
Oh, she was on both. Okay.
Yes.
So is there anybody else that would like to speak?
If you'd like to speak on this project, please press *9 to raise your hand. Seeing none.
Okay. So with that, I'll close the public hearing and bring it back to the commissioners. Commissioner Veal?
Yeah.
Commissioner Fowle?
Yeah. I'm process-wise, and that conversation that Commissioner Lindler shared on the last project has me stewing. In regards to process, we have a form letter from CAL FIRE on this project that basically says it should meet 4290, 4291 rates. Does our staff receive a signed verification from CAL FIRE at some point that under perjury says the property meets both 4290 and 4291 regs, and we are saying definitively it passes inspection?
Through the chair, we do receive a form letter from them for both.
I'm not talking form letter. I'm talking a personal letter for a specific project signed by a chief, a captain, someone whose head could be on the chopping block that says, I've inspected the property. It meets 4290. It meets 4291. We're okay with you issuing the permit. Do you get such a letter?
Through the chair. Rachel Jarab, senior planner. I will give the Amorn Pong Chai use permit, which is the most recent one that was approved, and that project site also had the requirement for 4291 and 4290, and I received two separate letters that stated that the property did meet both of those requirements.
Okay, so someone did do an inspection.
Correct.
And signed their name on a line.
Yes.
Okay. And that is a condition on all of these use permits.
All of the ones that we have recently approved includes both 4290 and 4291.
Okay.
Through the chair. I'm sorry. I'd like to add that we have not received back the response from CAL FIRE yet after they were scheduled for an inspection this week. So we don't have anything confirmed yet that they're in compliance for both 4290 and 4291 at this time.
Okay. Got it. Commissioner Hart?
No, I got a whole bunch here. First thing, I think we're going to continue this till next month until we get a response from CAL FIRE. That's appropriate. I'd like some history about Hammond Ranch, if somebody could please enlighten us. When was this created? When did Dwight Hammond sell all of this mess and move to Burns, Oregon? And then probably get put in prison by the Obama administration for starting a fire on his own property.
Do you have a definitive answer?
I believe it was in the 40s.
Could you come to the speaker, please?
Through the chair, I do have a definitive answer on when this particular subdivision was created.
Okay. Thank you.
If you look on page 2 of the staff report that Planner Gray provided, the background, the second paragraph, it states the property is a legal parcel originally created as lot 713 and parcel map number 71, which was filed for record in the Siskiyou County Recorder's Office on December 8th, 1970, in parcel map book 1 at page 69.
Good detail, thank you.
So, before you and I were on the Planning Commission.
So, I know I'm going off down a rabbit trail here, but you and staff are in the process, have finally been given the green light and funding to redo the county general plan. Uh-huh. And you're doing the housing element. Uh-huh. So, we go back to the 72 standards, but we didn't really have a county general plan. Living with subdivisions right out there. We didn't have a road plate standard. In this subdivision, is there an HOA?
I couldn't hear you, I'm sorry.
Is there an HOA?
Homeowners
Association?
No, there is not.
So who's responsible for the roads?
The property owners.
The property owners. So whoever lives up that street, everybody on that street is responsible for the maintenance, repair, and upkeep of that road, period.
From the top to old stage, is that correct?
Can you approach the cable, please?
We have the Hammond Ranch Landowners Association, but we also have the Dale Creek Road users. And Dale Creek Road users, everyone chips in, and it's all the landowners in Hammond Ranch, and we're responsible for the roads. But for our own personal road, Maple Drive, we on Maple Drive are responsible for that. So we pay dues to the Dale Creek Road users, and they get us at the old stage. And my husband always did that part of it too with Maple Drive, and so the last 2 years hasn't been that way. So on Maple Drive, that's why nobody made it here today, except for me. So
okay.
Excuse me. Do you have a group of people that are responsible for the road, not just snow removal, for the maintenance of the road?
Are you
a group of people from the property that is in question to Old Stage Road?
You know, we have a kindly neighbor who's willing to coordinate a snowplow, payments from everybody, and it's all volunteer, and it's very it's a lot of work, and it was for my husband and I for years, but we were only plowing, you know, Maple Drive, and now it's really up in the air when our guy with the boss plow is going to plow. It's just, he'll plow when he's ready to that day, if he gets to it, kind of thing. And then we have always usually get, you know, not in the drought years, but most years you have to get a big, heavy piece of equipment at least once or twice to widen the road. And even though my husband did, you know, could get those chutes made. So it's a bear. It's a big job.
So it sounds like the answer is no.
There's no legal document.
Is this germane?
It ties everybody financially and legally liability to the maintenance of that road. It's all volunteer.
It's all volunteer.
Okay, so right there, we as a commission can't go down that road. That's a civil issue with the landowners on that road. We don't have the ability to legislate here. So to go back and rectify an old subdivision that didn't have any standards at all, Counselor, we don't have any ability to do that, do we?
No, I was going to suggest the commission, although I think it's been answered for you, a question might be, is there either a formal association or are there reported restrictions requiring property owner responsibility? It sounds like the answer is no, and we covered it. To the extent that it's an issue about clearing the road, it is beyond our planning commission's ability to force people to reciprocally clear roads.
So can I ask you a question then? So with this situation, you know, it's a known snow zone. I mean, you know, the nickname for Hammond Ranch is Little Siberia. Even with, and I've been in weeds since 97, so that's what we call it. Does the, you know, part of our purview though is ensuring adequate parking, and it seems like with the snow, they're, you know, just like the last one, they're not able to park in their designated parking. How does that affect our granting a use permit when they're using neighbors' properties to park?
Well, that's a different issue.
Okay.
And that certainly is a problem.
So. Okay. I just want to make sure that I'm not combining those issues.
Okay. One of the things that, to me, is a given, it's going to snow there.
Yep.
Okay. How much snow we get determines how well the road can be plowed, how often does it need to be plowed, how big are the berms going to be, how wide is the road and your streets going to be. But this is just not particular to your area. It's everywhere. I've lived in this county all my life, except for my military time. So I've seen lots and lots of snow. When I was on the city council, we had a person come to for the city council and wanted her street plowed first. And I asked her, how much are you willing to put in to a $450,000 snow plow to get your street plowed first? So snow happens. You do as best you can under those circumstances.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Fowle, do you have more questions?
Commissioner Hart, finish.
Can we condition these use permits in these snow zones that they cannot operate? Just throw a date out there, November 15th to May 1. Just because of this snow issue and the impact to the neighbors, can we condition that?
Like limited operating periods, like we do in my business.
Yeah. Well, we don't know how much it's going to snow.
Well, I know, but that's what I'm trying to get around the issue.
If the road is not passable, you can't rent it.
I know. But you're
the simple. But they are, though. That's the problem.
That's the problem. You've got idiots coming up, going into these places, and creating grief for the neighbor.
They do it right in my front.
I know.
Last week.
But if you put a restriction on there that, okay, this business can't operate during this time frame because of snow issue. If we have a drought here and there is absolutely no snow, then there's gotta be a caveat in there for that some way, somehow. And I don't know whether it's the road department or planning that goes out and says, okay, you're good to go. I'm trying to find a way to make it work for everybody.
Are you always gonna know it's not the property owner that's using the road versus a renter?
Well, property owner can use it.
That's what I'm saying.
How do you tell between the two?
Yeah. Okay.
No, I know.
I agree with that statement. Go ahead.
No, I just was asking the question, can we legally do that?
I believe you could legally do it. I mean, we'd be best to make it narrow and tailored as possible. It is an explicit requirement in the county code that I'm just double checking that off-street parking must be provided, plus one additional space for each bedroom, and that's in the code, and it has to be off-street. It can't be done in the winter months. I guess my concern is a little bit, you're blocking off 7 whole months, of which you might have a couple of dry, 2 or 3 dry months where it isn't being blocked, but generally you can, yes. It would be best if we could tailor it as narrow as possible. We want to go down the road.
So basically we're going back to legislating.
If you put that condition, you've got to enforce it.
That's it.
Right, you're going to enforce it, but it'd have to go to the Board of Supervisors to amend the county code to reflect that. If you wanted to go down that road, we don't have the ability to do that.
Well, no, I mean, I think the Planning Commission could on its own add that condition in, but as narrowly as it could would be my advice.
Yeah, he's saying there's a condition of approval.
All right, so I'm just talking about back up. How did we get down in Mount Shasta where we had the city of Mount Shasta designate their sphere of influence all the way to the city limits of Wheat? And the Board of Supervisors accepted that in a unanimous vote. So you vacation rentals, anything under 2 acres, we couldn't do that. So that doesn't fit the bill here. How did the city of Mount Shasta convince the supervisors 5-0 that no vacation rentals based on the size of the lot?
It's everywhere.
That's politics.
I know it's politics.
I might add a little bit to that.
Okay.
Because here was my frustration, which I have stated before in this forum. In the city of Mount Shasta, you can put a vacation rental on a postage stamp. In the sphere of influence, it has to be 2.5 acre minimum. However, that subdivision down by the golf course, the largest parcel in that subdivision is 0.6 acres. And it is in the county. Now, how did that subdivision get built? And I'm not pointing fingers here at anybody. They're in there like, stacked in there like cordwood. And yet, if you want to put a vacation rental in there, it's got to have a 2.5 acre minimum. Now, what kind of BS is that? If the subdivision don't require a 2.5 acre minimum, how can you put a 2.5 acre minimum on a vacation rental in that subdivision?
Yep. But
and this is the same thing we're dealing with here. If I remember correctly, when I was in the fire department when this came about in the 70s, one of the concerns was the fire protection district from Mount Shasta was not in the area of the fire protection district. Another thing that was, do they want to have county approved roads in that subdivision? And they denied that. And I remember that specifically because that was one of the concerns for fire protection. So that was their choice to have.
And snow removal.
That's it.
So,
and that one right across the road on the other side is the same way. They are each responsible.
So yeah, I would say we need to bring it back to this one, but
it's all part of this mess.
Yeah, and I appreciate the history of it all. I think.
Councillor has a word.
Oh, Councillor, go ahead.
I had one further thought. I mean, it is law in this county that there must be off-street parking. So whether we put on a time, month restriction or not, if off-street parking occurred, they'd be in violation of their permit. So in one sense, they're kind of at risk. If it snows a lot and their clients have to park on the street, well, then the property owners have violated their permit, regardless of whether we have some time restriction on it. So.
And how, but that's complaint-driven, correct? That's a complaint-driven process. Mm-hmm. If a neighbor complains, like, hey, I've got a car out in my driveway, how do we then track it down to this vacation rental? Is that something that we have the ability to do?
Oh boy.
Yeah, we could do that through code enforcement, license plates, and so forth.
I have a question through the chair. Can we put it somewhere? Because this is a snow zone. If you have a vacation rental rented at a specific time and snow will prevent getting to the rental, can we figure out some way to have the property management set or the property owner say, you can't come now because the road's not accessible, or something like that? And I'm not real good articulating here, but you get my drift.
Yeah.
Some kind of a thing, say, just like when you rent a motel, you know, for some reason you can't get there, they usually call you and say, you know, we had a fire or we had a flood or something. So to keep people off the road if they can't get to where they're supposed to go.
Any comments, Mr. Dean? Your thoughts?
Thoughts, comments. I understand where you're going. That's a guess, right? Because you're going to book a place, right? You're going to book it 2 months out. You don't
exactly
know what conditions are going to be when time arrives. So if we go back to council's suggestion, we have in place requirement for parking to be established. And if that's not provided, you're in violation. The property owner should be forthwith and take that initiative to do that. Out of additional add to the condition, I'm not really sure.
But just the mechanics of that. How do you do that?
Okay, we'll say that the property owner has a tractor on site and clears it to park, but you can't get there. If the rest of the road's not plowed, you can't get there.
How does the compliance officer get there to check out?
Exactly.
I suppose in that case, the vacation rental wouldn't even be a vacation rental because there'd be nobody occupying it.
Thank you so much, sir.
Although it sounds like, you know, if I heard right, people are parking down low and then hiking in.
They've been parking down there. Even in the summertime, people park down there, correct? Thank you.
See, yeah, that's... Okay.
The outside generator, is that just a portable generator, or is that one of these
whole house
units that...
The whole house generator. Yeah, I don't know if that was stated. It was more just comment. It's certainly a...
she stated they had one on site.
Yeah, but not the size or type. I mean, I've got
right.
Three generators, but they
so
run like a refrigerator,
I
not
three,
the
I
house.
One.
I've got one that will run four or five houses at once.
Yeah,
well, I bet you do.
But it's a
Generac type thing, automatic start.
Well, it's got everything.
That, thank you so
it's
much.
It's a $7,000.
Mine, I have to run
so
it. But
hold on a sec. So, yeah. And then do they have a property manager?
Yes.
They, through the chair, they do. I was given a name, an email, and contact number, but I don't have a property address to verify that this property manager lives in Siskiyou County, and I'm waiting to hear back from the property owner. I haven't got a response.
I think this whole time he's just looking at
it. Yeah.
We haven't heard anything from Cal Fire yet.
Is this the rental called Blue Sky Lane?
Yes, it is.
Through the chair, it's called several things, as it has many different avenues that it's been tried to advertise under. So there's quite a few different for this address.
And it says, let's see. So this property is not within the jurisdiction of the Hammond Ranch HOA. Yeah, I think we should get additional information. Let's make a checklist of information that we need to hear more on.
If y'all want to postpone it, that's fine. This is one project that, frankly, I don't care if Cal Fire ends up saying it does meet their regs. In my mind, it is not compatible with the existing uses unless A, we start slapping down a lot of additional regulations and conditions, which leads to B, we've got to enforce, which leads to C, we can't enforce the regulations and codes we have on the book. I have a problem with this project. You can delay it if you want, but it's not going to change my mind on this one. I've got a problem with this one.
Okay. Yep. You can make a motion and we can make a decision.
If Commissioner Hart wants to delay it, that's fine.
I just have trouble putting these really high snow zones where you have all.
I do too.
High snow
and
high
fire. And fire. I'm looking at.
I mean, the canopy's touching. It's surrounded by a tinderbox.
But the canopy's open. So if you can't get there, you can't rent it.
Yeah. So do we have a motion? Or.
A motion to deny?
Whatever you guys want.
Well, I'll give the commissioners a chance. If Commissioner Hart wants to continue this to next month for more information that the rest of you may be comfortable with, I will not oppose that. But I've got a problem with this project.
Yeah.
I've got a contractor that I work with extensively on projects on a ranch. His wife, who's real estate, owns a real estate business. They just lost a multi-million dollar project in Lake Shasta because the potential buyer had the property in escrow and homeowners association out there wouldn't let them remove some juniper trees on the lot that already had, this is in Lake Shasta, right close to where that fire went through. They backed out and said, nope, we're not going to buy this house. Just because of fire danger. And people not being able to get fire insurance out there, I'm going.
That's the one of
the things that bothers me about Lake Shasta, if you drive around there, a lot of the stuff that was in danger is burnt.
Yeah. But back to this one, So we need a.
Motion
to accept or deny or to continue.
Yeah. Either way, whatever you want to do.
No, you do it. You make the motion. Let's continue.
Huh?
This is going to come up again. Yes, yeah. It is. Somewhere down the line, we need to address the issues that are presented in this particular thing.
Well, I don't have any information from Cal Fire to say yes or no.
That's not just God talking about snow, everything
right.
Else.
And nobody
road
got
conditions,
it.
Who's going to take it?
You know? There's just nothing there, so let's
say
no.
Yeah.
I want to see a motion test.
Oh, I've got a motion here.
Okay, go for
it. Fire away.
Okay, I move that we deny resolution PC 2023-007 as that the project is not compatible with neighboring property and presents a highly likely threat to public health and safety, period.
You covered exactly what I was going to ask, which was for any suggestion, findings, or... Reasons.
Those are they.
Thank you very much.
Do we have a second?
You may close the last of that motion about public safety.
Poses a potential threat to public health and safety.
This is the same language that you used in the Elder Group?
Yep.
Okay. Do you get a second?
Go ahead.
I'll second.
So we have a motion and a second. This is a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Aye. And let me further ask.
Yep.
Technically, you can do it either way. Either now that Commissioner Bell stated the findings, we can just leave it in the minutes. Or we can come back the next month with a formally drafted resolution. Of course, it's always nice to have a formally
drafted.
Do we
need to do a resolution for a project that we deny?
It's not required. You know, we can probably get by with it.
Then don't waste the taxpayer dollars drafting one. Okay. Do something beneficial.
Yeah, so with that, motion carries. Okay. So, moving on.
I do have commissioner comments.
Yep, okay.
In connection for staff.
We'll get there.
Me too.
So,
Let me make sure about this.
Items for discussion or direction?
Yes, that's me.
Okay, so, Commissioner Fell?
All right. So, I have a legitimate major grief, and I would like staff and the two head cheeses over here to hear this and tell me how we address it quickly and effectively. In Scott Valley, Caltrans is a failure. We've now had two storms that Caltrans has failed to plow Highway 3 from Fort Jones to the top of Scott Mountain. And frankly, I don't care if it's top of Scott Mountain, but from Fort Jones to at least Callahan. Our county road crews have every county road that a school bus travels on free of snow by 6:30 every morning. However, because of a state regulation, the Fort Jones crew and the Aetna crew are not allowed to drop the blade on their plows on the state highway as they're headed to go do snow removal. And I would like to know what is the process for getting an approved MOU between the County of Siskiyou and the state of California that will allow our county public works to be able to drop a blade and clear the state highway when Caltrans is unable to do it. I get that they're focused on I-5 to keep the main vein flowing through Siskiyou County. I get that. But what I also see is a Caltrans snowplow sitting at the base of Forest Mountain on one side or the other for 40 minutes and then making a pass over, a pass back, and sitting for another 40 minutes. In that 40-minute time, they could make it from the Buclarica side of Forest Mountain to Callahan and back and turn around and hit the summit one more time if they need to. We had 8 inches of snow yesterday. There's packed ice, it was 17 degrees, it was unsafe for the school bus, it was unsafe for the kids driving to school. It was unsafe yesterday for the kids driving back home from school. And this is a complete failure. This is now the second storm in a row. No Caltrans in Scott Valley. Period.
Commissioner
Powell. I'm looking for staff to tell me how do we address this, because this is not only for schools, but for emergency vehicles. I mean, I was doing 25, 26 miles an hour from my house almost all the way to Fort Jones this morning because in four-wheel drive, I was slipping and sliding.
Isn't there a Caltrans in the valley, Jeff?
There is a yard.
Okay.
They fail miserably.
It does have a Caltrans.
I'll tell it to them to their face. Yeah. They're worthless.
Is any suggestions?
How can we do that?
Yeah, I refer to council for the actual process to do that, just noting that there are MOUs in place between state fire services and local services, so there's bound to be a way to accomplish that. Could it be through our public works director and CAO to establish a need and also bring to the board to get that MOU approved?
So can we as a planning commission direct staff to take this to the supervisors, to get the word to the county works director, to get the MOU put in place so the county can at least drop the blades while they're going to clear off Cecilville and Aetna and clear down Scott River Road and out through Quartz Valley?
I'm sure staff, including myself, would be happy to get involved. It would take involving public works, which is going to be the main department involved in this.
And I've talked to the crews, both Fort Jones and Aetna. They're willing to do it, but what I've heard from them is, A, we're not allowed to because the state gets mad because, reason, their union workers won't get the time plowing the road. Well, you know what? They're not getting the time now because they're not plowing it, so what difference does it make?
Right. I certainly have no special knowledge or expertise. I suspect I would have helped and Rick can talk to Public Works, find out how they work with Caltrans, and find out with, what hurdles or not there may be as to getting this coordinated to get that road cleared.
Because I'm doing it as a public health and safety because we almost lost two kids last year because of an unplowed state highway. Mm-hmm. 3 years ago, we did lose one because of an unplowed state highway. The accidents aren't happening on county roads. They're happening on the state highway. Failure to address. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Are there any other items to bring up for discussion?
I do, yeah.
Commissioner Hill?
Last meeting, you mentioned the mother-in-law units that California Now has said you can have two. What do you call them, accessory units?
Correct. Right now, the state of California allows properties that are developed with a single-family home or that are zoned for dwellings to have a detached accessory dwelling unit up to 1,200 square feet in size, or an attached accessory, or actually, and an, well, sorry, there, let me be clear. There are three different types of ADUs. You can have either an attached or a detached ADU up to 1,200 square feet. If it's attached, it can be up to 50% of the 50% of the square footage of the existing dwelling, or 1,200 square feet, whichever is greater. Then there's the third type, which is called a junior accessory dwelling unit, which is a dwelling unit that's within the existing dwelling, and that could be either the ADU or the main dwelling, and it has to have its own doorway outside for egress, but it has to have its own kitchen area, whether that be a little efficiency kitchen or a full-blown kitchen. That's up to the property owner. It does not have to have its own bathroom. It can have a shared bathroom with the other dwelling. So there's three different types, but
so
if you
two with, separate houses on that parcel.
Yes, you could have two separate houses on a piece of property.
Are they separately addressed?
Yes.
So it would be 21 Maple Lane, 22 Maple Lane, right?
Right. Each independent living quarters has its own address. In case of emergency, they want to know exactly where they need to be going
and,
to respond.
In the county, what the minimum size of a lot is 30 three quarters of an acre for a septic system?
I would say if you're going to create a new parcel, the minimum parcel size with on-site septic and on-site water is 2.5 acres.
Okay, 2.5. So this new unit does not, it has to be separate septic tank, right?
So it could, it has the potential to use an existing septic system if it's adequate to support the second unit. However, most of the time people are building larger homes where that existing septic system is not adequate and they have to have a brand new septic system and a replacement area.
And so that separate parcel, that separate house has to be at least 2.5 acres, right?
No.
The one parcel has to be 2.5 or bigger to have the home and the second dwelling.
Okay. But
if you, and for clarification to the chair.
Yes, please.
So with the ADUs, you have an existing parcel. It may not be 2.5 acres, created some other point in time. Right? The ADUs are not specific to parcel size from the state. So, but as the Environmental Health Department, we have a purview to evaluate that and make sure the conditions are safe for that as far as sewage disposal and water supply. So for example, take a 1 acre parcel currently developed with a single family dwelling. They want to do an ADU accessory dwelling. We would evaluate that. In some cases, the existing septic system may be able to add a leach line onto it if gravity works to the tank, incorporate it that way. If that's not a possibility, then it would have its own septic system in regards to that.
But. Yeah. I understand California's need to have housing. This is what they're doing, right?
Right.
It's just
So, can they sell that separate unit?
No, it has to be rented out on a long-term basis.
99 years?
No, greater, 31 days or more.
Not a short-term rental.
It has to be long-term.
No, I'm saying you could rent at least that house out for 99 years.
Oh, yeah, we
could. Yeah.
So it's, in essence, it's a separate unit, separate parcel?
No.
No.
Not a separate parcel. The dwelling can be leased, but the land is still owned under one name.
Yeah.
Yes, basically a long-term rental.
Like a vacation house, in, or a vacation house.
But you see, even with a single family, with one...
Okay.
Guest house.
With one accessory building, we haven't seen an increase of people wanting to take advantage of it, have we?
Yes.
Why would you?
Yes, we have.
Like...
It's kind of, why would you, Dusty?
Well, I know why you would, but it just...
Why wouldn't you? Why would you do it? Because you can't, if they don't pay your rent... They don't pay the rent, you can't get them out.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, it's a significant process.
That's why.
Well, I'm just getting back to this need. California's panicked about we need housing, and this is a way that they've gone about to do it. And the problem is that the market is going to change, and we don't. Sister County does not need to worry about addressing California's problem with housing because. We'll take care of it.
Yeah, we do.
So, just so the Planning Commission is aware, for the past probably 4 years, we've lost about 100 homes on average due to wildland fires. So housing is becoming an increasing issue in our county. ADUs probably are maybe like a third or even close to half of the new dwellings that we permit lately. So they are becoming more and more popular.
Yep.
And all I'm saying is, with Shasteen, it probably has 2,500 vacant lots ready to build on. That subdivision west of the first off-ramp in Weed has 26 units that nobody's built on. I mean, there's a lot of vacant land out here to occupy other housing that doesn't seem that we are in a pro-growth region.
Yeah. So the benefit that a lot of people see to accessory dwelling units is that they don't have to buy a separate piece of property to build on them. And also the state has made it so that if you build a 749 square foot or less ADU, you don't have to pay any school fees or development fees on that home. And if you do build greater than that square footage, it's prorated. So there is a financial benefit for people to develop an accessory dwelling unit on their property.
Yeah, I think in Yreka, this has been, I think there's only been one accessory building in this town.
I'm not familiar with Yreka, sorry.
That was Ebb Schultz, or Ebb, what was it? Some,
can I have one on my property?
Yeah, Commissioner Mello?
Taxes, property taxes. We have to pay property taxes on that. And
so yes. That would be something that I would have to defer to the treasurer tax collector.
Yes, you do.
I mean, you obviously do have
you
to
do?
Pay
yep.
taxes,
okay,
but
so
I'm not sure what the increase might be, if any.
Okay. It's based on the value of the structure.
Yeah. Oh, that's how it's based on the value mm-hmm. of the structure?
Yep.
Okay.
If I put in a pivot for $100,000, I pay taxes on $100,000.
Yep.
House is the same way.
Yep. And then along these lines with, you know, the low-income housing element that we've talked about and not having a housing authority, I've started just to do some of my own independent looking at nonprofits and other type of organizations that may be able to help our county get grants. So I just want to let you guys know I'm doing that on my own time just to see what's out there, what type of grant process, to, you know, maybe attract somebody as a developer. Because it seems like with everything I've found, we have to find a developer to then initiate that process, you know, with the funding and the grants. So if anybody knows any developers, that might help. But other than that, I just been researching it because it is the low income housing is the big issue. I've been told, too, with sharing for extra discussion, that Mount Shasta is or is discussing putting a moratorium on all new vacation rentals. I don't know if you guys have been made aware of that, but...
It's being kept kind of quiet at this point, but it didn't get out. Yes, I heard that.
It's out now.
So,
within their city limits.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay. Well, I'm understanding
that... They could expand that, follow what the city would.
Yeah, okay.
That was just a question, though, but, you know, this idea of housing being tied to our vacation stuff, you know, we had that third party, the contractor, whatever happened with that report and our recommendations to the board with all the, have you heard anything?
Well, and I have a question because the letter that was sent to us by Missy Bullington was spot on. Because I thought about that. We said 3-year inspection, but the language said an annual $500 fee. And instead of marrying those two up, that $500 fee was for that inspection every 3 years.
Sure. Yeah, Haley Lane, planning director. And so that resolution has been rectified. It was a typo.
Okay.
And I made the board aware of that because I did take that item to the board for discussion, I believe, February 21st, presented the analysis, you know, report, and then also brought forward the planning commission recommendations. And so I will be taking this item again to the board March 21st. The board directed me with, you know, their own thoughts and feelings about, you know, housing stock and vacation rentals. And so what we will be presenting to them is more of a personalized, tailored approach to certain regions of the county. So we'll see how that plays out. So we will be talking more kind of specifically to certain regions, right? For example, should McLeod still keep the 2.5 acre minimum, should Scott Valley, right? Should the permits run with the land? Should it be more of an activity permit? How does that make sense? And so we will see, you know, how it plays out. There will also be a discussion on certain caps, right? Should there be a same cap for, you know, Butte Valley versus, you know, unincorporated Weed?
When you say caps, you're talking about the number of dwellings?
Right, how we discussed previously about the vacancy caps. And so it's going to be, I assume it's going to be a more tailored, you know, there'll be more tailored policy recommendations based on, you know, the regions within the county.
And then that will come back to us? Or does that just stay with the supervisors?
It stays with the supervisors, but if you'd like, each planning commission, I can update you all on what their, you know, how that progress has been going.
I'd appreciate it, just because that's such a big issue that we deal with.
Sure.
We need to be
happy to do that.
Briefed.
Because this moratorium's got to go.
Well,
it may not.
I know it may not.
Regionally, you may get slapped with one.
Good. But here's the deal. I know for a fact, because I have two people I know work at the ski park. They had to shuttle the employees up to the ski park because they were so busy.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Mr. Hart. Commissioner Hart.
When are we going to see all the general plan update, the housing update?
So we are still waiting on a response letter from HCD related to the housing element update. I assume it should be happening within the near future because we have to adopt the housing element, or the board has to adopt the housing element. I believe it's by May.
By
this
May?
Calendar, yes.
And
we submitted to HCD the housing element, that draft housing element.
Early January.
Yeah,
will
they've
that
had
come
it for
before
about
us,
3 months.
Or is that going directly to the board?
I believe it goes directly to.
I believe it would go directly to the board.
I believe it goes directly.
We don't have to worry because I got jumped about it.
Sure. And related to the general plan, you guys, you know, you all will be updated throughout the process. We're just kicking it off. I believe at the end of March, there's going to be an internal meeting with the consultant and staff.
kind of as a kickoff to this whole process. It's going to be about a two and a half year process, and so you all will be updated along the way, you know, with that project.
So 2 weeks ago, I was in Scott Valley at a watershed conference out in the middle of a hayfield on a groundwater recharge project. And walking back to the truck, I was approached by an individual who, I would say, was objecting to the Kittercraft project. And he asked me the question, point blank, why is it that the county hates the Scott Valley area plan? And my response was, the county doesn't hate it. There's going to be a general plan update, and there's going to be a whole new housing element update. And so, therefore, the Scott Valley area plan is going to be obsolete and probably illegal. And so be prepared when that comes to have a whole lot of rancor come with the planning department and the supervisors from the people in Scott Valley who went in 1978, Jeff, went to all that trouble to get that plan in place to deal with this stuff. Now we've got to deal with this low-income housing. Where are you going to put it? Who gets it when you're going to limit the number of places when you've got agricultural properties that are going to have their water taken away from them, which goes from AG1 to AG2, which can then be subdivided? I might walk in the door and say, okay, I want to go low-income housing. I've got it right here in my head. So
thank you.
Just be prepared, staff. You're going to get it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the city of Orange already had a standing room audience in their board meeting here last month,
mm-hmm,
of a whole bunch of people outside of the city of Orange railing against what the city is trying to deal with this low-income housing. That was just unreal.
Okay.
Well, is there any other discussion or direction from the commissioners? Okay. So the next scheduled Planning Commission meeting will be April 19th here at 9 a.m. We do have correspondence from a letter from Missy Bloomington.
That was the letter I had mentioned a few minutes ago.
Yep.
Discussing the typos.
Okay, so that is a typo. We'll correct it.
Yeah, it's been rectified already.
Thank you.
In our records, yep.
Any additional staff comments?
Just a heads up, April 19th, I may not be here. I'm missing my son's first baseball game. They're finally able to get one in today down in Enterprise. I am not missing the one that got rescheduled for that Wednesday.
Okay.
Good for you.
Good
for you.
Good.
Yep.
Good.
Is it a baseball season?
So with that,
it has been for 3 weeks.
No additional comments. I will adjourn the meeting.